guys, what's going on? Welcome back to the show. It is Riverdale Season 3, the mid-season finale. Do we actually know who the Gargoyle King properly is? What will be Archie's fate? And is there possibly going to be a crazy time jump at the end of this quarantine? All that and more coming up tonight on Riverdale. We'll see you guys in just 1 second.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Josie's on a vacation.
Man, Frank, did you pick the song?
No, Ben Bateman, this is all you.
That's right, pretending. It has nothing to do with the episode, but I just was feeling it. It makes me happy. This episode made me happy. I wanted to put out there for you guys. This is a band called The Outfield, Your Love. It's one of the all-time one-hit wonders. Great, great song. Great, great show. It's After Buzz TV. It's Wednesday night. Back.
All right, bye, everybody. That was it. We're wrapping it up.
Oh, this is exciting. I got Frank Moran in the house. How you doing, man?
So excited to chat with you about this episode. I don't know if I share your same enthusiasm for this particular episode, but we'll talk more about that as we break down this episode.
Do you share my enthusiasm for Your Love by The Outfield?
How can you go? When you're right. Ben Bateman was extolling the virtues of this song, and he was absolutely right. When you see those chords kick in at the beginning,
yeah.
You're like, all right.
Okay. Gets you hyped, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It's that and Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie that I think really just do it for me. Guys, it's AfterBuzz TV. We are the ESPN of TV talk. We talk about every single TV show on the air, over 150 TV shows, and this is the Riverdale After Show. So, yeah, Frank, just right out the gate, first of all, folks, this is Frank Moran. He's a treasure. He's a legend.
My gosh.
Look,
man,
at him.
Please. Don't look too long, though. It's gross.
He's holding it down. Truthfully, we're streaming this a little late, and it is 100% my fault. For whatever reason, after doing this for a very long time, I just had a brain fart and I just thought this was happening an hour later than it was. So if you guys have been waiting around for this, that's the reason. It's on me. But luckily, we're excited to be here to talk about it.
Yes.
Initial thoughts, Frank. How do you feel with the episode?
I feel the frustration that I feel a lot at Riverdale, and I feel like this episode brought some of those issues up, where we just see plot lines that were introduced even at the beginning of the season that have just kind of laid barren and then just kind of get picked up a little bit in this episode, but really don't go anywhere at all either. So it's kind of frustrating.
I would echo your sentiment. I think one of the things that Riverdale has done a lot of, and we have talked about this a lot, is that they really like to reference sort of specific, very very pop culture-y and media history, you know, things. Each episode sort of has a feeling. It's supposed to feel like something. So to do that, they often will give us imagery that makes it feel, I think, more significant than it actually is. So for instance, with this Gargoyle King story, we've got like groups of bound, murdered teens around a fire and like a king. And like that's the thing we've seen. And based on kind of what we're now getting, the information in this episode, that doesn't feel really consistent with what this whole Gargoyle King thing is. That's like sadistic True Detective murder. And this is like someone's drugging kids and parading around pretending to be some figure that they're not. That's kind of more the feeling I'm getting based on the episode.
Yeah.
They don't really add up. Like, one is very, very, very twisted murder, and the other one is, like, some nefarious plot to, like, basically get people hooked on drugs.
Well, it seems like if we're going by what we kind of discovered over the course of the episode about Hiram's true plans for Riverdale, and part of it is just kind of getting a vice-like grip on the city and making it his own, that seems like one motivation, understandably so, but then it begs the question, like, as you're saying, we've got these kids that have been murdered during the course of the season that have ties to this game that he's kind of unleashed on Riverdale. So was it his, like, does he have any, I mean, I assume, you know, he has zero remorse about it at all.
Yeah, I don't know what level of remorse he has, but it definitely feels like, there is, I don't want to say that the show has bitten off more than it can chew, but, like, a great example would be that if you look at a show, like a more classic teen show, we've referenced this before, but like if you take something like The OC, which is very simple, it's like, you know, teen drama, right? There's no supernatural. There's not like, I mean, aside from like the one kidnapping or murder here and there, it's not like crazy, weird supernatural like this, and it feels a little more grounded. So you get to kind of focus on those relationships between the teen characters. I'm finding myself in seasons 2 and 3 very distracted by the sort of scope of the story, whereas in season 1 it was like someone murdered a kid in town. That was the extent of it. It was a bunch of drama and teens that were sleeping with each other and changing partners, and it was all very charming, but there was no like Gargoyle King There was no, like, none of that stuff. It was just one person was dead. There was a gang. How did it happen, right?
Yeah.
That's a little more, like, I think the show has taken the chance of going into this other world, and it makes it more inconsistent. Some episodes feel really good, and other episodes feel just like a huge, confusing mess. Like, I don't know what's going on. So those, I think we kind of have similar initial thoughts, but what I will say is that there is a lot to break down tonight.
Yes.
Huge amount. It's the mid-season finale. This doesn't come back until January 16th. So I suggest we kind of just jump straight into things. And I think we should kind of start out with the seizures. We've seen a lot of this throughout the season, right? The Fizzle Rocks appear to be the thing. It's either the Fizzle Rocks or it's like the Griffins and Gargoyles, right? It's like we're not really totally sure what's causing them. But as it spreads, it's one or the other. And it seems like they're related, correct?
It does. But it's also, you would think it was because the dosage of the Fizzle Rocks, whatever the makeup of it is, isn't correct, and it's causing these reactions and these seizures in people. But Veronica, as far as we know, has not taken the Fizzle Rocks at all, and Betty's first seizure happened before she had ever ingested Fizzle Rocks. So it does make you wonder what is truly causing these seizures. It seems like the Fizzle Rocks is a convenient scapegoat, but it doesn't seem like that's a cause if they've never ingested it.
Yeah, it is kind of fascinating, and it speaks a little bit to some of the stuff that we found out, you know, at the Sisters of Quiet Mercy with them interrogating the headmaster there, and about her talking about sort of how Griffins and Gargoyles was created, and that it was kind of like a psychological aphrodisiac for these kids who were going through trouble. And it makes you think that the seizures maybe have nothing to do with the drug. They're actually just having to do with some, maybe it's like an imagery or it's some hypnosis type of thing. Like it's a phrase they're uttering as they're playing this game, or they're hearing maybe.
Maybe. I also thought for a moment that maybe they were tainting the town's water supply with like a small dose of the Fizzle Rocks, or say it's the Vixens that were kind of targeted at the beginning of this episode who a lot of them go into seizures. Somebody targeted like during their workouts, their water container.
Right.
Maybe somebody tainted that. But we never saw any of that, so there's no reason to assume that that was the case.
If you had to guess, I mean, right now, like if it was just a guess for you, would you say that you have over 50% of an idea of what is causing the seizures or not?
I would say under 50%.
Definitely.
I would definitely say under 50%.
Okay.
Because I just don't feel like I've seen enough clues, at least to me, in the course of this season so far, to make me think like, oh, we've seen shots of people drinking beverages or something like that. You're thinking, oh, wait, people are drinking a lot. Maybe there's something wrong with the beverages.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anybody doing that, or saying phrases or things like that, so I don't think I have enough context clues from the season yet to make a solid assumption.
So in town, the seizures basically break up the monotony of the story that we have been seeing so far.
Yes.
You know, whatever, where people were. It allows Veronica to end up back in the house, you know, so she's no longer staying at the speakeasy. It ends up that Shoni, you know, Cheryl's taking care of Tony Topaz and all that stuff. There's some very cute lines there, right? And they're very loving.
Oh, yes.
I like that.
Obvi.
Yeah, Obvi. I like them as a couple.
Yeah, very nice. No, I feel like that relationship has done wonders for Cheryl. Cheryl this season is the character that I enjoy watching a lot more than I have in previous seasons.
They've made her less one-dimensional.
Yes.
Yeah, she's definitely more enjoyable, and the fact that she sort of has a little bit, like it's less like she's part of like crazy family Blossom. She feels like more part of the gang.
Yes, yeah? Absolutely, which I like much more, and giving her a bit of happiness in her life, so it's not all just let's see how crazy the Blossom family is week after week, is a nice change for her.
Where the F is Ashley Murray? I feel like Josie she kind of evaporated this season.
Well, she was she had a seizure last episode.
Yeah, but I just mean in general.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like she's like she was a series reg. She was supposed to.
I mean, so is Kevin too, and that's my other complaint about this episode too, because it was at the beginning of the season we see Kevin join the ROTC,
ROTC
to be with Moose,
yeah.
And then we see Moose in that scene in the first episode where he's like he gets a little uncomfortable, like, well, what's Kevin doing joining this? Never picked up again until we see him here at the end and they start making out a little bit.
They're like having fun and laughing.
Yes.
Like, what, are you guys on drugs? Like,
part of it is they are on Fizzle Rocks, it seems like. But
yeah.
But it would, this that scene would have, those scenes that we saw would have more impact for me if I saw them struggling with that at all anytime during the course of the season.
You know, can we actually enlarge the chat here just on the screen so we can make sure we can see it? You know, it is a mid-season finale. I want to make sure we can shout some folks out. In the meantime, guys, while we're loading this up here so I can make sure I can see your comments, I want to remind everybody here, at AfterBuzz TV here, we produce many, many, many after shows for nearly all of your favorite TV shows. Honestly, guys, we are the ESPN of TV talk. Over 150 shows. We've been doing this for years and years. We've got dramas, reality TV. We've got red carpet reports, all kinds of stuff. Recently, within the last year, we kind of expanded into multiple YouTube channels to make your interests a little bit more specialized. So if you like drama, you'll get more drama shows in your notifications. You know, reality, same kind of a deal. Superhero shows. So please, if you are watching this, if you're listening to this, subscribe on YouTube. Comment, like, subscribe. It really helps us stay high in the standings to have people continuing to find out about AfterBuzz TV, and that's really the best thing. If you don't want those notifications, you can turn them off. It's not a big deal. But if you like them, if you want to know what's going on, please hit subscribe. Let us know in the comments how we're doing, what you think. Give us that rating, that review. You know, help us continue to be the ESPN of TV talk. Oh, great. Look at this. We have the chat up on the screen. This is exciting. we'll read some comments here in just a moment. So moving over to the next bit of the show, we've also got Jughead and Archie and introducing some characters that we have not met yet.
Yes. Name checked quite a bit through the first few seasons.
Yes, Gladys and Jellybean.
So, yes.
Jughead's mom and his little sister who has a crush on Archie. Adorable. Love that.
Yes.
Big fan.
And nice to see Gina Gershon anytime she shows up. It's always a little fun watch.
Yeah, Gina Gershon, for those of you that are watching or listening and are like maybe a little bit less familiar with Gina Gershon, she's of a similar ilk to a lot of the rest of the parents. They've kind of taken a bunch of relatively famous movie actors and put them all in as the parents. Gina Gershon, probably most famous for Showgirls, I would think, like because it's kind of a cult classic.
Or Bound?
Bound, and then I would also say like Showgirls is because it's like so referenced as a bad movie. Bound, and then also Face Off is pretty massive.
That's true. Face.
It was a big one.
Off.
She's good in that, and then she was in a lot of other stuff back in the day. She has a great great part in Eastbound and Down. She's very funny. But yeah, just great casting choice. I like it. She feels like she's about the right age.
Yeah,
I felt like she was about the right age. So yeah, Gina Gershon shows up. We meet Jellybean, crush on Archie. Big fan of that storyline. Thought it was hilarious. Thought it was adorable. she's got the slingshot.
Taking down,
Penny Peabody.
Boom, pop. One crack in the skull.
Boom, pop.
Which I like that. They didn't draw it out. We just got to see a moment of just Jellybean going to be a total badass with that slingshot.
Yeah. So, okay, so they show up here, and you're kind of starting to get the sense that, you know, it's going to go one way or the other, right? It's going to be because... I've got some questions here. Oh, it's going too fast. I can't even read it. I'll shout some people out in just a second. Ivan Soto wants to know, Bateman, would you name your kids Jughead and Jellybean? LOL. The answer is absolutely not.
Why
never.
Not?
Jughead? Jughead is like naming your kid Tractor. I don't know what that is.
What about Jellybean?
I mean, that's a little more defensible because it's kind of cute, but I still would... You have to like have some balls, really, to name your kid a name like Jellybean. That's like, again, that would be like naming my kid like
Raisinette.
Yeah, Porsche Carrera or something like that. You know, it's like kind of cool, but like your name is Luke Skywalker kind of a thing. Like,
oh, that's right.
You know,
my kid will be named Chowder. That's what I've decided.
Really?
Yeah, like a good chowder.
Congratulations.
That's great.
Congratulations on your next child being named Chowder.
Yep. Be proud, everybody. That's an AfterBuzz TV exclusive.
Already working on getting you an embroidered sweater.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Terrific. Excellent. I like this storyline. I was excited to meet them. Penny Peabody shows up kind of out of nowhere. She's a little bit of a problematic character for me. Characters like her in shows like this... They basically are conflict points that they just sandbag and they just have them like in the background until they need to cause some more crap.
Yeah, we never see anything other than them when they're out to get a pound of flesh from somebody.
Yes, like they just basically exist and you're supposed to be afraid of them, but you kind of know the stakes will never really hurt your main characters too badly, so they just show up to start some crap.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens. She just is there somehow. She talks about they left breadcrumbs, and she holds a knife on Archie, gives an opportunity for Jellybean to save Archie, and then Gina Gershon, like...
Goes to town.
She, like... I don't know what happened.
A quick 10-second tangent. She does say how she's able to track Jughead and Archie because of the breadcrumbs they left behind. You go on the run. How well do you think you'd do?
Me personally?
Yes. You, Ben Bateman, you leave right now after the show and you go on the lam.
How long am I on the run for?
I mean, you're on the run. You take off right now, you're gone for a week. Do you think you're going to be easy to find or hard?
No, I'm soft as baby shit. I fail.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I would try. Don't get me wrong. I think I'd have some people skills. I think I could talk some people into helping me. I think I'd be okay with that. You know, but I don't, like, I think I would get into, like, parts of town, parts of the world that I'm unfamiliar with. I wear suits everywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd get robbed, like, 6 times between here and the first town, I feel like. You know, it would be brutal.
I mean, you'd have to, I mean, much like Archie, he colors his hair. Would you, then you'd have to shed the suits.
Mm.
You got to totally change who you are.
Yeah, it's a strong point. Yeah, the hair change. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. That was my favorite moment of the episode.
All right.
We'll, you know, we'll get there.
That's a nice little 10-second tangent. All right.
I mean, how do you think you would do, Moran?
I would like to think that I've seen enough TV shows and films that you've kind of got at least a starting base of what not to do.
You'd find like an immigrant family that doesn't really want you to sign paperwork. You pay them cash under the table.
Absolutely.
How do you get your cash? Do you have enough cash? I mean, is that what happens?
I don't have enough cash. So it's going to be, you have to accept the fact that at least starting off, it's going to be some cold nights on the street.
Right.
And you got to be absolutely comfortable with that.
You got to find a way to scam people. You know, there's things. I just watched Ocean's 8 on an airplane a couple days ago. And I had skipped it when it was in theaters for whatever reason. Did you watch it?
That's a heist movie with zero stakes to it.
It's not a good movie.
No. But the opening sequence is entertaining to watch.
When she gets out of jail.
Yes.
Yeah, it's great. She goes and she does the thing, right? Like that. I was like, okay, this is pretty good. She gets out of jail, so she goes into the store. This is cool, guys, if you haven't seen this. But she does this thing where she gets out of prison. Her outfit that she went in with is like a beautiful cocktail dress and a dope jacket. And you're like, okay, that makes sense. She was probably pulling off some heist.
Mm-hmm.
So she has nowhere to stay. So she like shows up to like a super classy hotel. Her hair is done pretty well. She goes in and picks up all this like expensive makeup and perfume and cologne or whatever, and she like tries to return it without a receipt. And when they're like, "You need a receipt," she gets angry and she's like, "Fine, whatever, I'm done. Just give me a bag, I'll leave." And they give her a bag and she just walks out with the stuff. I was like, "That's pretty brilliant."
Yes,
that's smart. Then she does a whole complicated maneuver to get a free hotel room. She steals some luggage. I was like, "Okay, that's." But like that's movie stuff.
Yeah.
If I tried any one of those maneuvers, it would fail and I'd get arrested.
Well, part of it is just the confidence of knowing that you can pull it off.
Yeah, that's fair.
And you're a confident man, Ben Bateman. I don't worry about you.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough, Frank. So that is where we're at, is that they are kind of trying to decide what direction do we go. And now this decision is made by the fear of the master plan from Hiram. And it's, how do you feel right now about Hiram as a character? Like his presence in this season has grown exponentially. Like I feel like right now he's riding about as high, about as inflated as a character as he ever could possibly be, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this to me, it feels like classic soap opera trope where you bring in a character that everybody for the most part hates and you build up their villainy to such a high point that the only thing you could do then is kill them.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a whodunit to this point as well. So I feel like that's what they're setting Iron up for.
He's going to die and it's going to be a whodunit?
I don't know what else you could. I mean, I don't know if putting, because otherwise he gets busted, he gets sent back to prison. We've seen he's already been in that kind of status already, so I feel like the only next thing you could do is you'd have to kill him.
Yeah.
If you want to generate, I could see the season finale being like it's going to be like a who shot Hiram situation, and then that kind of propels next season where it's like the mystery of who killed him.
It's like pretty much going to be like The Simpsons who shot Mr. Burns. Like,
yeah.
It's that episode.
It's, you know, we've lost all kind of subtlety or nuance with Hiram. It is just, I am just evil, 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 evil. I'm doing everything I can to get whatever I want, and damn everybody else.
What would you have done if you were this show? What mistakes do you think that they have made to get them to this point? Where, like, what would you have, shorter seasons? What would you have done?
I would have done shorter seasons. I feel like these 22 episodes are almost too long. That first season was 13 episodes, 13, 14, whatever the episode count was for that. Regardless, it was a much shorter season, at least by 7, if not more episodes. And I felt it made just for tighter storytelling. You don't have to worry about what kind of tangents do we need to go just to prolong the story, because we can't hit certain beats until certain parts of the entire season.
I mean, I definitely agree with you because it's 7 episodes deep and I feel exhausted. I feel a little bit how I felt last season with the Black Hood storyline. And it's developing in the same way where there are so many unanswered questions now. It's like it's moving in this like very just like running in circles kind of direction that I don't know how they're supposed to finish this storyline, make me feel satisfied, and also create interest for the second half of the season.
I just want to, for 1 second, I want to ask you, because Riverdale is, it's not just Archie, it's not just the kids, but it is the town.
Yeah.
And part of that is the adults that come with it. And we've always, you know, the great thing about it is that you cast a lot of these adults in this town as they were once young actors themselves in sort of, and for the most part, in kind of teen dramas, whether it be on TV or film. But I feel like we're missing a lot of these relationships. Like, to see like Archie and Fred, do you feel you want to see more of that relationship? Do you want to see more of Gladys and FP kind of, you want to see them exploring or us learning how everything went wrong? Do you want to see that? Or is just these little bits where you get this scene of Fred and Archie reuniting for a hot second, Gladys and FP just for that little kiss and or a little hug and farewell. Is that enough for you?
Or
do
no, you I want more.
So do I.
I feel like for multiple reasons, right? For the first reason is that like whether talent is an issue or not, you're talking about more seasoned actors. You're talking about actors that have credibility, that have been around this game for a long time, who, in the same way that, like, I mean, I just saw Mortal Engines, and it's a bad movie. It's one of the worst I've seen this year. But Hugo Weaving, on screen, with a sweet beard and mm-hmm. slick back hair.
Yes.
Just him showing up before he even talked, I was excited to see. And I feel the same way about most of the adult actors in this show, because I really like Luke Perry. I really like Skeet Ulrich. Right, I really like Gina Gershon. Like, mm-hmm. I see them, and I kind of have that feeling of seeing one of your favorite athletes, where you're like,
"Yeah,
this is cool. What are they going to say? What are they going to do?" They don't need to be the whole show, but I do think it's been a little bit disregarded, and I think more like I guess we'll just talk about it now. You know, I was going to kind of save it, but my favorite moment in the whole episode was Fred and Archie. It felt so much more resonant than like virtually anything else I watched this show.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's just a father and son reuniting, and the father knows that he's got to let his son go and just kind of go off into uncharted waters for him to, you know, save himself.
Like Veronica and Cheryl tossing, was it maple syrup?
Yes, it was.
On Penelope Blossom after she has a seizure to be like, what do you know and what's your involvement? And she licks her lips. The absurdity of that scene compared to, like, Fred, who's really good, being like, I love you, son. I wish I could go with you and teach you carpentry in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry this whole thing's happening. I know we've already fought to get you out of jail this year. And I wish I could be with you, but I know that I can't. So I brought the dog for you.
Yeah.
And when I had to say goodbye, and he's like, it's not goodbye, Dad. I was like, geez, this is just killing me.
Yeah.
This is like a real scene and a real story where I believe this. I don't even care about the stakes, what's going on around it. This moment is what it's about for me. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
The thing that bummed me out, too, about Fred, FP, and even Sheriff Keller, is that we saw when Archie had been sentenced and he was heading off to juvie, that we saw FP, Fred, and Sheriff Keller make a vow, like, we're going to find these kids, we're going to get Archie free. Never once brought up again. Never once did we get to see the three of them trying to solve this.
Right.
And try to and set Archie free. It never went anywhere. It's disappointing because it sets up like, all right, this would be cool. We haven't seen this. These three adults working together, it'd be cool to see. And we never saw anything come of it.
Yeah, I agree. So that kind of going on the run storyline, I think they're misallocating some of that stuff. But, you know, there's obviously a lot to still see sort of unfold. Really quickly, guys, before we move on to Betty and what's going on with the Gargoyle King and Ethel and all the craziness with the Sisters of Quiet Mercy, I want to talk to you guys about Poshmark. Poshmark is a wonderful app, guys. I have used Poshmark. I know you know that I wear suits and I wear dress shoes and all of these things. Poshmark is similar to like an eBay type of structure where you get to make offers on fashion items from other sellers all across the world, right? It's like basically Black Friday every single day. Incredible brands. I mean, we're talking about Louis Vuitton, Michael Kors, Tory Burch. I mean, there's a ton of different stuff. All you gotta do is download the free Poshmark app. They carry women's, men's, kids. They have tons of brands, the top brands, right? So like for me, whether it's something simple like a Zara suit jacket or like a Michael Kors pair of shoes or a Ferragamo belt, I can make offers on these types of things, and it's awesome. You get a $5 off your first purchase by using the code AfterBuzz. When you sign up, just download the app. It's called Poshmark. It's a very cool thing. We've just started working with these guys, and I'll tell you, being turned on to it is a very cool thing for me. As you know, we're all hustling in LA. We're all trying to make it happen here. I don't have millions of dollars to spend on my fashion, but I like to get a nice pocket square here and there, or have a cool belt. So check out Poshmark. You guys will be happy that you did. Let's talk about Betty.
Absolutely. Bring it on, Ben Bateman.
Of Quiet Mercy. Okay, so this is where you start to get a little bit of, like, explanation of what the F is going on with the Gargoyle King, where it comes from, where Griffins and Gargoyles comes from. All these kids are hooked on smack. It's not actually, but they're hooked on these fizzle rocks.
Yes.
Betty's been, you know, vomiting the rocks up so she's not sick. And Ethel is getting jealous because Betty's talking about how, like, the Gargoyle King is loyal. And there's this whole sort of triangle going on before Betty finally finds a way to get Ethel on her side, which was a good turn. I think Ethel, I didn't like Ethel as a villain. I mean, she worked for the minute, but I was just, like, tired of her as a villain.
Yes, absolutely. So it was nice to see that it wasn't all of her willingness. There was a fizzle rock component to what she was doing.
I agree. So they have to like, basically, you know, bind the headmaster, the headmistress. What is her name? I don't have her name written down in front of me.
Oh, Sister Sapling. It's not Sapling.
We should have it, right? Yes. I have all of these other things written down in front of me. You all know who I'm talking about here. The woman that runs the Sisters of Quiet Mercy. They have to basically convince her to tell them what the heck is going on. And they find out. And so this is one of the bits of the show. I looked over at Frank and I was sort of like, do you know totally what's going on here? Because I feel like I'm getting two stories. By the end of the episode, when like the order had gone out, the drugs, all of it, there's a bunch of moving parts, and it's not that consistent. It feels confusing, like combined with a lot of the information from earlier in the season. And also, I just don't really know who the Gargoyle King is, what the Gargoyle King is, the severity of the Gargoyle King, or what the stakes are at this point.
Well, it seems to me, what I think, and feel free, everybody that's watching, feel free to correct me.
Yeah, please help us in the comments, guys.
But it seems that, all right, so this game was created. They have that statue already sitting there in the Sisters of Quiet Mercy. They bring troubled youths there. They're so freaked out by it that they create this game to help kind of deal with that. And from this game, people start getting addicted to the game. The sisters see that it creates focus. So that's how you get that. Only enhanced later on by the addition of the fizzle rocks. But setting the fizzle rocks first, because that didn't exist back when all this stuff was first happening. So we set that aside for the moment. But through this psychosis that all these children were experiencing, this mad game was born. And so the only main question is how it got from being inside the Sisters of Quiet Mercy out to the general populace. So that by the time that we see the adults, the parents, back in the teenage years, in the late early 90s, playing Griffins and Gargoyles, how it got out to that point and got everybody sucked into that game. So we don't know who made that happen. And I think Hiram, back there as a kid, I don't think it was Hiram as a kid who was responsible for that, but I think it was Hiram as a kid seeing an opportunity to see what this game was doing to people, and that's when his plan was born, to be able to kind of use this game and fizzle rocks to really gain control of this town.
Well, I think one of the most interesting parts about that is, like, I mean, and you know, shut me up here if you need to, because, like, this is totally just me being the guy who's like, well, I know what's going on in the real world. I run a toy company, guys. We're a large company who makes retail products. We have to figure out where to source them from. They're made in China sometimes in the U.S. I know what it actually takes and costs to manufacture a product, to make multiple copies of it. It's not easy. And when you're talking about something with, like, custom-made pieces, sculpting them, actually making them somewhere, paying, like, not even the money, because, like, he seems like he's always had money, but actually doing it, right? Where does it get made? How do you get it?
Mm-hmm.
There's enough copies of this game. That has to have been something that happened. Hiram's not going to do that when he's a kid. He's not going to do that when he's 14 or something. Like,
no.
That's ridiculous. And that's the part of this whole, when she's like, we created this game, and it's like, you sculpted a bunch of custom miniatures and manufactured a branded game called Griffins and Gargoyles with a specific set of rules that actually works and keeps kids engaged.
Yeah.
We worked for 2 years on a tabletop game at my company. I was heavily in the development process. If you don't test it endlessly, it fails. That's the part of this that I'm watching, I'm just like, don't go that angle. That doesn't make any sense to me. anybody, half of the world plays tabletop games at this point, right? We've all played Settlers of Catan or Magic cards at some point. Like, somebody has taught you how to play some tabletop game.
Yes.
Those games don't just, it's not like, okay, you roll this dice, you move three steps, and it's really complex, and it'll keep you engaged forever. A good one is a real project. So that's the part of this whole thing that is frustrating to me, is like, I liked it more when it was more mystical, not like we, these, like, headmistresses at this prison created this really complex game that's great and made it.
Well, but it also seems, I think, much maybe like a D&D type experience. Unlike, and I've not played a lot of Settlers of Catan or any of those, so I can't equate that. But it seems like at least a Griffins and Gargoyles / D&D, you have a game master, dungeon master.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you have somebody that already kind of knows the rules and is taking you through it,
yeah,
I feel like that takes a lot of the pressure off you as the player to have to know the rules, understand how everything works, because they craft the experience for you and draw you in.
Totally fair. And you know, as somebody just said here, Peyton727 in the chat says, real-life situations don't apply to Riverdale because they do whatever would make sense in the town of Riverdale. You're absolutely right. We've got Derek Hogan saying, I still practice Yu-Gi-Oh! I am a Magic the Gathering pro. I travel for it. I was in Portland this last weekend for it. I'm with you, man. I love that stuff. I don't expect Riverdale to be realistic.
No, that ship sailed long ago.
I don't. I'm noticing that there's multiple ideas of where the stuff's coming from, and I wanted them to pick one that was a little bit less, like, we'll fix it in post, is basically what that felt like.
Well, but it feels like, I would think overall, it seems like we don't know who the Gargoyle King was back when Hiram was a kid.
Right.
But we do, I think by that last shot we see at the end of the episode, is Hiram looking at the costume that he's worn a few times this season.
Right, and he's the guy that's in the woods, we're assuming, yes, chasing kids around. And basically, at the sisters, when Betty puts on this outfit and she becomes the
Griffin Queen.
The Griffin Queen, and they all freak out and they believe it because they're all high. You're like, okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
All she has to do is put on these fake wings and they all buy in, which means he could just be wearing this thing in the woods and it's going
to
work.
And now, knowing that it's Hiram inside that, it explains why people were reluctant to just go and tackle him directly, because he's a wrestler. You know, he's going to put you in, he's going to do some move on you if you come at him. So I understand why.
Do you think he wears the singlet under the...
Of course, man. You don't want to put a lot of heavy clothes on. You already wore that costume itself is heavy. You got to streamline, singlet it up, and then you put on that heavy wood branches and ridiculous antlers, and you go to work.
You think if he like found Archie in the woods, Archie would be like... Archie would be like, what are you doing here? Yeah, and he'd be like, Archie, I was all state. I can put you wherever I want you. It's just like, I feel like you would. All right, so that's kind of what's going on there. They make this getaway. At the same time, the order finally goes out. This final order goes out, you know, to hook. What was the final order? Did I'm so sorry, because I was watching and I was trying to... But all of a sudden, the town's quarantined because Hiram calls the governor, and now everyone... But I felt like everyone was sick already. So what did they do that made it worse, but none of our main characters at the end, were seizuring?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they use that as an excuse to convince the governor, which I'm sure is getting some kickback from Hiram as well to go along with this, but that they should quarantine the town. But the thing that really bothers me, and we've talked about this many times,
yeah,
is that what is going on with Hermione? Because she was a woman that, you know, from last season, that mid-season finale, where we see her with Archie at the end, and you're like, oh, yeah, okay, she's
the boss.
Mother, to now, just, like, she is just going along with everything that Hiram says. And we never really, I don't see enough scenes with her as the focus to understand why she's doing this with Hiram. And I know she's talked with Veronica a couple times about, this is my husband, you know, we're doing this, but don't question... I don't think just because I go along with him that I agree with everything that he does, but it's, when are we going to see anything from Hermione just at least standing up to Hiram, or at least working behind his back to try to change things?
Well, if Extended Shockwave 3 thinks, External Shockwave 3 believes that if Archie was to meet Hiram in the woods in the singlet, Archie would go shirtless and try to fight him. And if that's the case, then Hermione's got nothing to worry about.
That's true.
No, I'm with you totally. That's one of the frustrating details, is that I thought that was a better play. I liked that she was, as we called her, the godmother.
Yeah.
I thought that was like a plot line we pulled that was made a lot of sense and was going to be pretty exciting. And it definitely feels like it's been pushed into the background. We talked about it a little bit last week, too. I mean, so I don't, like, we review movies and television. Like, that's what we do. So it's a job for us. We do a lot of it. So I want to buy into any show or film that I want to like. Like, I want to be a fan of the show. I'm certainly not here, like, looking to pick nits. Like, that's not my point. But I do get annoyed when things start to feel formulaic to the point that it takes me out of it. And Hiram has become about as one-dimensional of a character as the show has ever had. Like, he's not a real character anymore.
Yeah, he's just untouchable and omniscient. He's always one step ahead of everybody, and he can outplay anyone.
And somehow, in the room, when Veronica confronts him, he's like, no, let me give you the names of the guards. Everybody believes me. Silly girl. And it's like, oh, yeah, of course he wins, because he's smarter than everyone.
Like, his rebuttal to Betty in that room, or Veronica in that room, I was like,
yeah, okay. Show me the names of the guards. Take me to the prison and show me what the heck's going on, because you're lying. Yeah, I know you're lying, and so does everyone here. But so anyway, the order goes out, and everybody's phones start buzzing. The town's quarantined. You know, now this will take us kind of back for a second. You know, Jug and FP head back to town after this, you know, this moment. Jellybean won't give FP a hug. Do you think we're going to see more Jellybean and Gladys?
I feel like you can't just cast Gina Gershon for a one and done.
Right.
We got to see him come back at some point.
Yeah.
Fair. Especially if they're quarantined. They have nowhere else to go, so it makes sense for them to go back. Maybe there while they're trying to figure out what their next moves are.
Right. All right, guys. We are starting to get a little short on time, so I want to make sure we get into everything we need to get into here. I was sent an article, which is... here we go.
After Buzz TV News.
Oh, it's running through too fast. I can't read the comment. I wish I could. I was sent an article by one of our best fans, one of my favorite fans of the show, Charmed Original, at Charmed One Forever, who always makes sure to get us, you know, great, great intel, what's going on the show. TV Line, go ahead.
Yeah, you're saying, I pull it up here. Taylor James, I can understand about Ben wanting the show to have some realism because they do handle some real life issues, but then again, it's based on a comic, so it could only do so much with the realness.
I think that if the show had started out this way, if the show had really been like in this vein from the beginning, I probably would have less to say about it. But I really liked a little bit more of the reality of the first season. I thought we really played with the character relationships more. I thought that was a little more what season one was about. And there was one dead kid. Like that was an interesting mystery. The whole season was about one murder. Those stakes were fine. I the problem for me is that the stakes are so much greater now, and I don't really believe them anymore. Like,
yeah, I mean, like we talked about before, like this is season three. Where does season four go? Because we're gonna have to have
exactly
something bonkers.
Exactly. So, yeah, this article is written by TV Line. You know, Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa talks a little bit about sort of all of the different things that have been happening and his predictions, or he, you know, reveals some things, and it sounds like there's going to be a time jump. So, how would you feel about this? You know, The Walking Dead did this recently. Time jumps are a thing in TV that you see sometimes. I kind of like it. I think a time jump makes sense because I feel like we're so entrenched right now in such a crazy, crazy part of the story that I almost am like, I need to flash forward. I need to reset a little bit. I need to get away from some of this crazy because I don't even buy into what's happening anymore.
Well, the nice thing about that is that you can completely change your character relationships and not really have to worry about spending all that time explaining why. Doing all the, I mean, a time jump does all the heavy lifting for you. You can flash forward 6 months, a year, and all of a sudden Veronica could be with Reggie. And like, you don't have to see everything leading up to it. You just go like, all right, this is the new status quo. I'll find out whatever little bits I need to know along the way.
Yeah, definitely. I think a flash forward could be really, really strong. And a big thanks to Charmed One Original for sending that over. You're always very, very helpful. If you want to follow Frank and I and you know, help us out with this type of stuff or ask us questions, follow me at Ben Bateman Media, Twitter and Instagram. And I love talking about this sort of stuff.
It's well worth your time, folks.
Where can I find you, Frank?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Happy Go Jackie.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. I want to get into predictions because we did see a little preview for next week.
That's true.
So
for next for January.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Okay, so based on the stuff that we saw in the scenes from next week's Riverdale.
Or January 16th Riverdale.
Well, it's the next week we're going to see.
Oh, I'll get you. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're going with you. Okay. Yeah.
So I feel like we're going to have a major shakeup with the relationships. You know, are Archie and Veronica still together? Is Reggie now in the picture? When Joe gets back, what are we going to see? My prediction, I think there's going to be a major shakeup. I think that Jug's going to come back and something is going to break up him and Betty. And I think that when Archie comes back, Reggie and Veronica are going to be together, and that's going to put Barchi Barchi into play. I think it's this season that we get Betty and Archie.
I don't know. It feels like now we've made these four characters such at the forefront of everyone else that it would feel weird to me, and I think it'd be just too hard to keep the whatever realism is left in these couple relationship dynamics to have them swap partners at all. I feel like I can see Reggie's great because he's more of a secondary character. We don't see him all that often. He could be with Veronica, and we know that once that breaks up, her going back to Archie is not a big deal. But to see like Betty and Archie getting together, the show's not done yet, so we know that's not going to be endgame. So you'd see them kind of break up at some point.
Yeah,
I feel like then it what plays in a comic book is not going to play well on a TV show to see him bouncing back and forth between the girls. And
great
like,
casting choice, by the way, on the new Reggie. Big fan. Very pretty. And I like him far more than Ross Butler. I'm a big fan.
I mean, he wore just a ski mask and went shirtless last season. Never forget that.
Yeah, that was a great episode.
Calling out that Black Hood.
Weird stuff. How many good episodes, like really, really good versus really, really weird and borderline homoerotic do you think we've seen? Not that that's a bad or weird thing. It's just like, it's just a little strange. Like sometimes they'll go down that road. What, I mean, like how many good versus like confusing or bad?
There were more second season than there have been this season.
This has been a better season.
Yeah. I mean, everything that they were doing with the Red Hood or the Black Hood with the red circle calling them out. Yeah. That just went down a rabbit hole. You're like, what is happening, guys?
Weird.
What's going on in that locker room?
Really?
Do you
really
feel
strange.
Bad that we ended this episode though without a shirtless scene from Archie?
I was disappointed, especially now that he has a different hair color. I felt like it was a little bit like a Ken doll. You know, if you're going to change his hair, take his shirt off. How does the hair match the abs? I don't know. I wanted to know that sort of thing. I guess we'll get that next season. So
it didn't seem like that his hair color job is going to last very long, because I know clips that we see for the next episode, he already is sporting the red hair again.
Derek Hogan, the majority is homoerotic. Derek Hogan, I can't say you're wrong. I can't say you're right either. So anyway, guys, I think that's going to wrap us up for Riverdale, the first bit of season 3. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. As always, I believe the full panel, Sam Davidson, more people are going to be back once we come back from this break.
Yes. Sam has been dealing with some personal stuff, so yes.
Yeah, tweet at her. Let her know that you love her, Sam D. Guys, enjoy your Christmas, your Hanukkah, your Kwanzaa. Enjoy your December. Happy New Year. We'll see you in January. I'm excited. Thank you for everything, Frank.
Ben, I couldn't do this without you.
You're the man. Bye, guys.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.